into the statement game, everybody. I am Jeff Suing, along with my co-pilot, my man, my main man, my super special, beautiful main man, Pat Barker. We're here to talk sports with you today. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend with the NFL. I know it seems like we're a little late, but I promise we have taken in no takes, so you'll have fresh takes. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl more next week. Little trade action coming in the NBA. We want to get to that before the trade deadline hits. And then we're going to have a little fun at the end of the pod. The Royal Rumble is coming up on this Saturday. And so we're going to do a little Royal Rumble of our own and crown the greatest sports moment of 2024. But before we get into all of that, I want to introduce you to my guy. I'm so glad to be doing this podcast. And we're back again. This is number two. This actually means this is going to happen going forward. Number one is easy. You can do the first podcast easy. Getting number two out, number three, number four, that's how you know you have a product, folks. It's Pat Barker. Give a big welcome hand to Pat Barker out there, everybody. We got a live stream or something. Can you hear people clap on a live stream? I don't even know.
No, absolutely not. You don't want to hear. They just go in the chat and call you names until you ban them. That's my understanding of the live stream.
We've done a good job, you and I, of going like upper chest up so yeah. They can't see our bodies. That's really important for us in the comment section, I think.
Yeah. Although I've been hitting the gym hard. So here's one thing that I've noticed, though, and, you know, I know we're here to talk sports, but I'm probably down. I set a goal. Did I tell you about my goal?
No, there's a new goal.
There's got to be a goal. If there's no goal, then I lose interest very quickly.
Sure.
But I weighed in at, like, a routine checkup or something back in, like, October at 241 pounds.
Okay.
Not good, but it's certainly been worse. But I was like, you know what, let's try to improve on that number. And I said, you know what, man, I'm about to be 42 years old. I'm 241. What if my goal was to lose 42 pounds by my 42nd birthday and get below 200? So that has been my goal. I have not weighed in since. My birthday isn't until April, so I've got time. I'm just going to weigh in on the day of my birthday and see if I hit it. I'm down a couple clothing sizes. I feel good. You know, so all of the health indicators are good, but the scale can be fickle. You know, it could be tough. And this is coming from somebody who's weighed, as much as 323 and as little as 179 as an adult and usually somewhere in the middle. So I, you know, if I end up feeling good on my birthday, I won't let the scale ruin my day. But boy, it would be nice to hit that.
So, okay, I have some questions here. You're feeling good recently. Do you mean physically, or like you look at yourself and you're feeling good about what you're seeing?
Oh, both.
Okay, now I want to ask this because this came up last pod, and we had some traction in the YouTube comment sections. You're a hat guy now.
Yes.
You think the hat guy thing has changed things for you on how you see yourself?
100%. The pairing of being less gross mm-hmm. and fat and covering up my head where it's just it's a war zone up there. Those two things together, yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm like, you're wearing clothes that fit and kind of match, and like, this is what you should have been doing, you know, your whole life. So, yeah.
And the nice thing about, I feel like what you're going to do is you're going to treat hats like sneakers, right? You're going to get like, yeah, I'm 42, but I'm wearing, you know, hats that the 20-year-olds are wearing, hats that the kids are wearing these days. Is that like, what I'm looking at your head right now, that's a nice Sixers cap. Mm-hmm. But it very much looks like a young people's six. You are projecting that you're the youth right now.
I've got a nice mixture. Okay. I've got some dad hats. I've got some cool hats that I have no business wearing. Okay. And I get very self-conscious, especially if it, you know, if everything matches and I look like I'm trying to be young and hip. That is what I'm trying to do, but I don't want people to know that.
I've got to ask about the variety of hats we're talking about. Like, are you going to eventually come on this thing and you got like one of those like taxi cab driver hats? No. So, okay, you're just going straight snapback.
Snapback fitted baseball caps. Yes.
Can you wear a fitted flat?
Of course I can.
Okay.
Would you like to see it?
Just wear it next week.
I got a bunch.
Okay. I can't wear the flat brim. I think I look stupid with the flat brim. Yeah.
I'll
come on next week. I'll wear my one flat brim hat and I'll let you see. And it, just for whatever reason, really stupid on my face. So I can't do it.
I tilt the brim. I bend the brim a little bit. I can't go completely flat. Completely flat is too much for me, but
completely flat is tough because I'm like, then what do you do? A lot of people with the completely flat, they leave the stickers on. I don't understand what that is.
We're not doing all that. Did I tell you my big philosophical debate regarding hats and what teams I'm allowed to wear? Have we had this conversation?
Oh, no, I like this a lot though.
I feel like it fits with the pod. So my thing is obviously from Philadelphia, diehard Philadelphia fan. Mm-hmm. I will always root for the Philadelphia team in every single circumstance. That is who I am. That is what I do. However, also a big sports guy. So I have partial season tickets to the Dodgers. I like to go watch baseball, right? And if the Phillies are not playing the Dodgers, I'll root for the Dodgers. I don't care. If I go to a Lakers game and they're playing against whoever, I'll root for the Lakers. It's more fun if you have a rooting interest in the game. So I have started adopting kind of that policy. I also think that having lived in LA for over 11 years now, I'm able to rep the city that I live in. Mm-hmm. So, but I draw these very bizarre lines. Like I have a Dodgers hat that I wear and I like, but it's white with black lettering and like a black brim, matches a lot of things, very, very cool looking hat, but I can't wear the Dodger blue hat, but I'll wear the blue Brooklyn Dodgers hat.
I'm lost. Why? What's the rule here?
So what I'm making my own rules and they're confusing. I agree. I'm trying to find a middle ground all right, let's see where you land on this. Okay. Here's the scale. Some people will say you're from Philly wearing anything other than a Philly hat, repping a team that is not a Philly team is a violation of fandom.
I do think that 323-pound Pat Barker would have said that.
100%. Yeah. Oh, the Pat Barker who lived in Philadelphia, if he met this guy right now, he would spit on this guy. I fully acknowledge that. And then there are other people who are like, I will wear any hat as long as it looks cool. Right?
Right.
So to me, for some reason, because I'm too much of a pussy to just pick one of those sides, I am trying to find all these loopholes and workarounds and things like that. Even when I look for hats that look cool, I'm like, oh, well, I could wear, you know, like if I wanted to make something match, I would buy a Montreal Expos hat, for instance, but never a Washington Nationals hat. Okay. I think you could wear a Florida Marlins hat, but not a Miami Marlins hat.
Sure. Okay, those are division teams, though. Like, let's move outside your division. Could you buy a White Sox hat?
Again, could I?
First of all, you can't pull off a White Sox hat. I feel like that is reserved for only rappers who rapped in the 90s.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, in your rules, if they're outside of your division.
Right. I haven't been able to pull the trigger on it yet. I was thinking about a Baltimore Orioles cap because I love the cartoon Oriole. I think it's very cool.
Great match.
Black and orange matches a lot of things. I haven't been able to do it. The examples I was giving with the Expos and the Marlins are those are now defunct logos and in the case of the Expos names.
But okay, so you could if you found one, you could buy something that said Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's yes.
Okay.
But again, I'm just kind of making this shit up on the fly because the inner Philly fandom, every time I look at a non-Philly hat, is like, what the fuck is wrong? You're a disgrace. But then the guy who's like, that would match something I wear a lot, is like, why can't I at the age, here's my, ultimately my question, why can't I at the age of 41 years old shut off the voice in the back of my head that goes, don't do that, that's fucking lame?
That's a really tough question, because what I was going to say is, because right now, how I see what you're doing right now is I see it as a stifling of your creativity, which is tough for you because you're a creative person. And so eventually, much like if somebody holds in some anger, that will come out in a way. I think that's going to happen to you too. I would buy the Orioles hat if I were you. I would do something like that to just break that seal, because at the end of the day, if you let this fester, it's going to become a thing where that does become a hard and fast rule. But then in 3 months, you're going to show up in this podcast with a fucking Frank Sinatra fedora, and I'm not going to know what to do with myself. Like, I'm going to have to call you out on it. But then, like, how do I call you on it? It'll destroy your confidence.
Right.
Thing is, like, buy this Baltimore Orioles hat, because at the end of the day, if you don't, I think it'll destroy this entire podcast.
Okay. I love it. That settles that. It's all in order.
Good. I appreciate that. And I hope to, in 2 weeks, see you wearing a Baltimore Orioles hat on this. Don't wear it during the baseball season. Have a nice thing. Off season, wear a fucking Orioles
hat. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I've been finding workarounds, and we won't stay on the hat thing for forever. But like last week, I wore a Yomiuri Giants hat. I'm like, nobody's going to bust my balls for rooting for it. I'm not even rooting for them.
Yes. And ironically, I had you butcher a bunch of Japanese names that particular episode.
That haunted me the entire week. I'm not going to lie. That really ruined me. But I can't get into that PTSD right now. How are you?
I'm doing okay. A lot of work. Next week, I have my first video project in the Rochester area. So I'm very nervous about that. Working with the American Heart Association. How cool is that?
Oh, wow.
So
that hasn't been disbanded yet.
Yes. I should have kept this until next week's episode, actually, because you never know what's going to happen in the next, 15 minutes. I got that coming up next week, and I'm taking a trip out to California. It's been a while since we've been back out. I'm going to stop by Los Angeles. You and I are going to go see a Clippers game on the wall. Yes, and watch him play Ja Morant, and hopefully Ja Morant dunks on somebody's head. And that's basically what will be there. Maybe we'll look for Billy Crystal, try to get him on the show, talk to Clippers. But that's about all we can do. So I'm excited for that trip. I'm about to turn 40 on the 20th of February. And so I'm going to be in the 40-year-old club. I feel every bit of 50, so I'm ready for 40, I guess, as ready as I'm going to be. And here we are. I wish I had a better, I wish I had a hat thing, but the fact of the matter is I got this great blonde lettuce up top, and hard to put it away.
The fact that you're going to be 40 and your hair is still kicking ass like that.
I don't think
that for granted.
I don't take that for granted. And I tell you this, my mom's dad, that's what it's supposed to be genetically. They always said it's your mom's dad. That's whose hair you get. I'd be bald already. And so I don't know how this is happening. Maybe my mom's not my mom. I don't know. A lot of things could have been hidden from me for a really long time. I'm not really sure what the thing is. But at the end of the day, I'm very thankful to be turning 40 and to have this hair. And the blonde gray combination, that's great, because nobody can really tell. Nobody can really tell. I can tell, but unless you're close up, you can't really tell. And when I got this dumb, stupid goatee thing sort of thing going on, but I'm feeling all right. We're here. Thanks, man.
You look like 25 from the forehead up, and you got the silver fox thing going on from like the nose down. So
I gotta tell you right now, I like Hat Pat. Hat Pat is much more kind than not Hat Pat. Not Hat Pat. The Pat in the hat is the best.
Okay. Dr. Seuss over here.
Hey, I just named the episode. What do you want me to do? a couple quick things for you guys out there. We will be back to our regularly scheduled program. We'll be going on Mondays from here on out. We'll try to let you know as best we can when we're not going to be doing that. But we're going to pop these out weekly. We're feeling it. We're feeling good. And so look for us on YouTube. We're up on Spotify now. We're up on Apple Podcasts now. You know the rate, review, subscribe. Please leave comments. Tell us we look like shit. I don't really care. But I just wanted to get that all out of the way and so we can clear the way and talk some sports. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's start. We got like only a couple quick hitters here, and the big things we have to talk about are the NFL games that we saw this past weekend. And the first one I want to start with was the first one that we saw, the Eagles-Commanders game. I'm going to be honest with you, and this is how you know this is a very truthful sports podcast. If we would have came on the airwaves before this match or we would have made predictions on the first podcast, I would have taken the Commanders because I have a very simple rule in the NFL playoffs, which quarterback is better and which coach is better. And I'm going to be honest, I would have said, I think the advantage is with the Commanders in both of those categories, so I would have picked the Commanders to win that game. I was super wrong. And maybe I'm super down on Nick Sirianni, but I look at that guy and I think, that's an idiot. And I don't think he's good at this job, but here he is. He's in the Super Bowl, his second Super Bowl. We get to see him cry during the national anthem again. The Eagles take down the Commanders in convincing fashion. What was it, 7 rushing touchdowns?
Yeah, 7.
Oh, my God. You, as an Eagles fan,
yeah,
you must be – and I've – during – while we've done this pod and back when we were doing Jeff and Pat – or Pat and Jeff, excuse me. I don't want to get the name wrong. Back when we were doing Pat and Jeff, your Eagles fandom grew, right?
Yeah, they
started as basically nothing, and then it developed into – you got back into being – an Eagles fan. And here we are today. You're seeing another Super Bowl. I feel like you've kind of reached where the peak is. You say go birds and shit now on your Instagram. How's it feeling for you to be back in the Super Bowl?
I mean, it feels great. Full disclosure for the entirety of this conversation about both games is I saw very limited amounts. I was in London over the weekend for the Roast Battle League championship. And, you know, being a Philadelphia fan for my entire life, and like you said, my Eagles fandom has waned a little bit, but I've seen enough losing across the other sports to kind of get the gist of it, right? Sure. So when you're planning an event like the World Championship, you're not really thinking about, like, will this interfere with an important Philadelphia game? Because you just assume there won't be an important Philadelphia game. So at the time I scheduled this thing, you know, a couple months back, I didn't even look up what date is the NFC It wasn't even in, like, on my radar. And of course, it ends up being the same, you know, day as, the game. And you're like, oh, well, it was a day game. So you watch the game before the show. No. Time zones, baby. It aired at 8 o'clock p.m. London time, and of course, our show was at 7:30.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was able to very briefly sneak a peek at the score a couple times during the show. I was judging very important battles. People flew from all over the world, and I'm like, wait, what did he say? I was too busy refreshing ESPN. But it was a great show, and then afterwards, we found an Irish pub that was showing the game around the corner. And there were a lot of celebratory shots going around, and by the time we settled in, the Eagles were way ahead, so it was totally just a party kind of like atmosphere, you know, so I enjoyed it very, very much, but it was never really in doubt from the time that I started watching it, and I don't have a ton of, like, really great insight about the game. I'm thrilled. When the Eagles are going like that, they look absolutely unstoppable. I saw the highlights after. I mean, Barkley's first 2 touches being what they were. It's just, you're setting a tone there. I'm so happy, not only as an Eagles fan, but as a fan of football, that this, you know, dead position that everybody was like, oh, yeah, no, we're not spending any money on running backs. You know, The shelf life is 4 years. And you look at a guy like Saquon Barkley, and as good as he is, a year ago, I would have said he might be washed. I don't know. Like, yeah, honestly, given the shelf life of running backs, I had no idea. So to see him come out and do what he's done, and it's just such an entertaining part of the game that I feel like football had gotten away from in recent years with all the emphasis on the passing game and protecting quarterbacks and all that kind of stuff. So it's just cool to see, you know, the sequence with the tush push and them going offsides, what, like four times in a row, and then the refs threatening, like, we'll just give him a touchdown, was the, like, wild. Because I was like probably three shots in at that point, and that's when you start to question, like, is this a real thing or am I just super fucked up? But overall, you know, very entertaining. And that Eagles team can win a Super Bowl. You know, the week before, I was like, they got to clean it up a little bit. But that Eagles team, that's a potential Super Bowl champion right there.
We'll get into the actual Super Bowl matchup a lot next week. I think that's the kind of the proper time to do it, while kind of giving these final four their shine now and the actual games that happened their shine now. But yeah, I will say this, just to, maybe this is a little prelude to what I'll be talking about a little bit next week. I love that we have, I don't love this matchup because we've seen it, right? And it's just like, as a fan, like, you want something different, and it is what it is. Though these were very clearly the two best teams in the NFL in either conference going into the playoffs. Certainly the most talented rosters. But the builds are really different. And I love that. It's not, it's kind of an uncommon thing in sports, right? Basketball builds are generally kind of the same. Now, you can have a great center on one team and a great point guard on another team, but at the end of the day, you're kind of building around that heliocentric sort of thing, a specific way in basketball. You're trying to kind of get the same sort of player. Same thing in baseball, right? You're trying to get guys that get on base and hit home runs, and you're trying to get pitchers that strike people out. In football, there's so many different ways to build a team, and now we have one coming in, and one team is built around a guy, right? It's just built around Patrick Mahomes. And the other one is very much built around a running game, which is almost new again, right? It's new again. Like, if you put Patrick Mahomes on this Eagles team, they would have ran the schedule. They would have beat everybody, and they would have finally crushed that Dolphins team. Like, they would have just been too good for everybody. But this is a team, Jalen Hurts, not as good as Patrick Mahomes. I'm not breaking any news there. But in the context of that team, they're so good and they're used so well. Credit to the coaches over there, and so unique that it's hard. It's really hard to game plan for a team like the Eagles when all you've been seeing is McVay and Shanahan offenses from everybody else, you know, copycat league. And I do wish more teams would look at, like, oh, let me do something different in the build to get there. And credit to Howie Roseman, who might be the best executive in sports, for building something truly unique that, as you said, can absolutely win this Super Bowl. Let's move on, though, okay? Let's get to the other side of things. So in the AFC, we had the Chiefs and the Bills. This is the matchup that everybody wanted. In fact, every year, everybody's going to want this matchup, right? Everybody's going to want to see Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes go at it. This was a highly anticipated battle, another game that didn't disappoint score-wise. And it was a close game down to the end. Patrick Mahomes makes the little dump-off pass to Samaje Perine to seal it at the end of the game. This one happened a little later, so I'm not sure if you got to watch this one a little fuller. You didn't. Okay, that's totally fine. Well, you know, here's the recap. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen are very good at football. I'm not sure if you knew that. But we had the Chiefs go over top of the Bills again. Last week I asked you, hey, you know, Lamar Jackson ever going to go to a Super Bowl? And you said, is he going to be Patrick Mahomes' backup? Sort of starting to get the same feeling for old Josh Allen.
Yeah. It's by the time this game happened, I believe this was 3 a.m. London time. And I want to fill you in on what the game plan was and what it ended up being.
Yeah.
I made the mistake of, and by the way, if you're ever going to travel across the world, don't do it for a weekend. We had to do it for a weekend just due to budget constraints. We were flying battlers out. It was an expensive ordeal. But I booked my return flight for 11:15 a.m. the morning after the battles, the show. Yeah. And whenever I book a flight, I just make the mistake of thinking like, oh, my flight's at 11:15. I'll leave the hotel at 11:14. Like, what's the big deal? No, you got to get there early. You got to go through, you know, security and everything. Turns out Heathrow is pretty far from like city center where we were. Long story short, I get told by London people, they're like, you have to be out of here by 6:30 a.m.
Oh, my God.
To get to the airport on time. So then you start going, I'm just going to stay up all night. Right. That's the I'll stay up. I'll watch the two football games. As soon as Bills Chiefs ends, I'll hop on the tube and no problem. Well, what happens is you have a really successful night and there's a lot of like, you know, fans there who are like, let me get you a shot. And, you start by 3 o'clock. I could not see straight. I was long gone. And we had, furthermore, you know, the bars aren't open 24 hours a day, and it's really hard to find a place showing American football at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So we kind of migrated back to the hotel. We were down in the lobby. They hated us so much, and deservedly so, understandably. I get it. Apologies to them. But my plan was to stay up all night. At 3 o'clock, roughly, I just hit a wall. And apparently in the middle of hanging out with everybody, I just got up and left and didn't say goodbye to anybody and went to my room and crashed and did not set an alarm, did not take out my contacts, fell asleep, all my clothes on, just like this. And fortunately, one of the other comics was like pounding on my door at 6:15. And he's like, we got to go back to America. Get up. Save my life, because otherwise I might still be sleeping. So no, I did not see any of the game. I saw a few of the highlights after, of course, I'm aware of everybody, you know, the various ref controversies that will always be there during a Chiefs game. But beyond that, I did not see anything.
Wow. An Irish goodbye in London. That's great. Sounds like a movie that Seth Rogen stars in or some shit like that. to give you a little insight on this game. I watched this one front to back. I'm here in upstate New York. This is a place lives and dies with the Buffalo Bills, right? They are super in to the Buffalo Bills. It's not unlike when I was in Cleveland with those folks at the Browns, only these folks have like legitimate and real and substantiated hope. Like there's real reason to believe that team should be good. And so, you know, the whole city is walking around in Bills Zubas and Josh Allen jerseys and DeMar Hamlin jerseys. And everybody is just so excited. And watching the game, I got to tell you, this one seemed super close. And there was, you know, sure, there's like a ref controversy here and there. The Bills are lucky they didn't get beat by 3 touchdowns. First drive of the game, first two passes that Josh Allen throws could have been pick sixes, right? He gets sacked later in the game and fumbles, and while he's getting sacked because he's a mutant, was able to recover the ball like with one hand to just barely stave anything off. There was another throw that should have been intercepted later in the game. The Chiefs, everything went right for the Bills, except maybe a couple of calls, but yeah. Everything in that game went right for the Bills, and they still couldn't get over the Patrick Mahomes hump. As bad as some of these losses to the Chiefs have been in the past with that mental block, this is the one that I think is going to cause the biggest, like, if Josh Allen and the Bills get over this mental block, I mean, it'll be one of the greatest wins in NFL history. And I don't care how it happens, if they beat the shit out of them, if it's a close game, it doesn't really matter. This was one of those ones where it was like, man, even when the game of football decided that the sun was going to shine on the Buffalo Bills on this day, we couldn't beat Patrick Mahomes. we couldn't do it. That's tough, man. Like, that's tough to get over.
It's going to happen. I'm going to take a stance right now. You're going to see Josh Allen play in a Super Bowl. You're going to see Lamar Jackson play in a Super Bowl. I really believe that. And I believe that because we just came out of the Tom Brady era where he was more prolific in reaching and winning Super Bowls than any other quarterback in the history of the game by a large margin. What, he went to 11 and he won 7? Those numbers are astronomical, and I know everybody wants to say who's the next so-and-so, and they're already projecting Mahomes to put up those numbers. I don't think he's going to put up those numbers. 11-7 is wild. But even during the course of Brady's dominance, during the course of his career, you saw Aaron Rodgers win a Super Bowl. You saw Drew Brees win a Super Bowl. You saw Peyton Manning win 2 Super Bowls. You saw Eli Manning win 2 Super Bowls. The vast majority of the great quarterbacks during Brady's tenure found a way to get it done, because there will come a year where Patrick Mahomes gets injured or they just have a bad game, and then somebody has to make the Super Bowl. If we're taking the pinnacle of quarterbacks ever in Tom Brady and saying during his career, look at all the other guys who managed to get in there and win one. Not even get to one, win one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm lowering the bar. If the bar is just getting to one, these guys will get to one, because Mahomes will not get to all of them.
Ah, boy, I hope you're right. the really tough part about it, when you're in the situation that Lamar and Josh Allen are in, is that Patrick Mahomes is in your conference, right? Sure. So you get over the hump of Patrick Mahomes, which already feels like your Super Bowl, and then you got to go play the Super Bowl. And so I think you also risk like some sort of like, oh my God, we got over the Patrick Mahomes hump, and like emotionally what that would take out of you to then go play the Super Bowl. And then at that point, is Jaden Daniels so good at quarterback that he's beating you on the other side of things? So you like actually get there. Imagine getting over the Mahomes hump and then you can't close the deal on Super Bowl Sunday, which is why I think it's smart to say they'll go to a Super Bowl. Doesn't necessarily mean they're win. Look, they're both incredible players. They're both aliens. We're lucky that we get to see guys like Josh Allen, guys like Lamar Jackson, play football. Like, we're watching the like 99th percentile outcome of what Michael Vick could have been. That's what Lamar is. And then we're watching the 99th percentile of what Cam Newton was in Josh Allen. And Cam Newton was probably already like the 95th percentile of what he could be. And Josh Allen's better. He's a little more accurate. Just kind of plays quarterback well. But, you know, same shit. Giant man that nobody can tackle. And so they run him every now and again. And maybe he'll break down a little earlier than he should. It's amazing to watch these sorts of guys, these sorts of athletes play at the quarterback position. I hope that they get to a Super Bowl just so they don't have that little thing that people say, the little Carl Malone thing, although people should say a lot worse things about Carl Malone. But
oh, my God. Yeah. The only thought I have on that, and I'll make it super quick. My thinking around that has evolved a little bit to where if that happens, and we'll pivot off of Malone, because again, there's way worse Malone stuff. Let's say Charles Barkley.
Yeah, there we go. Everybody likes Chuck.
Amazing how we pivot to the guy who like spit on a child when he was a player. We're like, let's go with the lesser of two evils in this case.
And it's like so much less evil.
So much less evil. Yeah. I have a joke. I'm not going to make the joke. Anyway, if that... Because that is the narrative in sports, and that's what I hate about the hot take culture and everything like that. And if those guys never win a Super Bowl, that will follow them around. But that is more an indictment of the person making the argument than the person they're making it about. And what I would say is, I feel bad for the people who would not fully enjoy the career of a Josh Allen or a Lamar Jackson in the way that we would, because they're so caught up on the myopic argument of Rings. Rings, rings. It's all I can think about, rings. If they don't win a ring, then everything they did, it doesn't, none of it means anything. Okay, cool. Honestly, enjoy watching sports that way and looking at some of the greatest freak athletes to ever play. And instead of like telling your grandkids, like, I saw Lamar Jackson do something incredible, you're just like, ah, he didn't win a ring, he stinks. We're a Flacco household. Shout out to Flacco, by the way. He's killing it.
Yeah, he's got mentions in both of our episodes. We got a way to find a way to shoehorn Joe Flacco in every single time. Like that dude that does the voices for Pixar. He's like in every movie. Joe Flacco references in.
Well, and for the uninitiated who didn't listen to our last podcast, Flacco is my personal white whale. I graduated from a very small high school in a very small town that nobody's ever heard of, and it was my mission to be the most famous person from that town who went to that high school, and, you know, I'm doing okay, but, you know, a few years after I graduated, they were like, the football team's got a new quarterback, he's pretty good, and, like, the football team when I was there, 2-11 every year, so I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm sure he's great, and next thing you know, he's Joe Flacco, so I'm playing catch up, and I'm way behind, so I will mention him every episode, yes.
Hey, man, you're traveling the world, you're in London, you're doing your different things in the roast battle game. I don't know. I think you got as good a shot as anybody from your high school to catch Joe Flacco.
We're all playing for second place, Jeff. That's fine.
All right, finally, to close it out, look, we talked about the winners, the good teams. And this is also a time in the NFL where there is hope for the teams that aren't good, the organizations that are crap, that don't do anything. Bunch of head coaches got fired, like they always do, and it's a lot of the same offenders firing head coaches and bringing new head coaches in. I thought we'd just give some quick thoughts or maybe do some things on some stuff that stands out. I know I have to talk about one in particular, and I will tentatively and very very carefully. But I'll do it. So we had a bunch of hires. The Bears hire Ben Johnson. The Raiders hire 73-year-old Pete Carroll. The New England Patriots bring back Mike Vrabel. The Jacksonville Jaguars hire Liam Cohen. Duval. I nailed that. If you don't know what I just did, I nailed it. Okay? If you don't know, get on YouTube and search some things out, but just know that I absolutely nailed what I just did right there. The Jets hire Aaron Glenn, and the Cowboys hire Brian Schottenheimer. The Saints job, the only job still open, the last one standing. A lot of thing we're getting out of the Saints job right now is who, like, doesn't want to take the Saints job. Like, there was like a thing where, like, Bill's offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, pulls himself out of the mix for the Saints job, and then he loses the game. And then Cliff Kingsbury pulls himself out of the Saints job. It is just like people announcing they don't want to coach the Saints. So I don't know what the hell is going to go on there. I know what has happened already. Any of the things I just talked about, things that you want to discuss and things that sound interesting to you.
Yeah, I'm going to hit a couple of them real quick. Number one, I respect the people who are pulling out of the Saints job. I really think, and I'm going to tie this into Liam Cohen. I really think that everybody's rush to be a head coach and leave a good situation in favor of a situation that is almost certainly going to suck. It's going to pay more, and if it goes well, yeah, you could become one of the great coaches, and like you could be a Hall of Fame. I get all that. But this idea where you are in a cushy coordinator position and you're just looking to become a head coach, and that's all you want to do, and the situation around that coaching job is almost irrelevant. Almost irrelevant. It reminds me of, you know, if you've ever met somebody who's like afraid of like being alone, and they're like, I have to be married by the age of whatever. And it's like, well, what are you looking for in a partner? Are you dating anybody? Do you have somebody who meets your criteria? And it's like, I don't have criteria. I just need to be married. And it's like, but what if the person sucks? And it's like, I don't care. I've never understood those people. And a lot of times coaching jobs feel like that.
Yeah.
You're willing to leave a good organization with structure, which, by the way, I'm not saying you have to do it forever. Hang on and continue in that role for a few more years. You'll get better job offers.
Yeah.
Liam Cohen was the OC for what, a year?
1 year.
In Tampa?
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the Jaguars come around, he's like, yeah, he clearly did no research as evidenced by the Duval. They stink. They've always stunk. It is an inept organization historically. And now you're going to go in and what's going to happen is you're going to struggle. You're going to get no leash because this is how they do head coaches and quarterbacks. You're going to be fired within 2 years. And then you're going to be known as the guy who said the weird thing in the press conference. And we can't hire him again because he only won 9 games in 2 years and he's a fucking weirdo. And now you're fucked. Stay. I'll never understand that. So to me, that hire jumped out where it's like, dude, what are you doing? Stay in Tampa for a couple more years, prove yourself, get a better job offer. That's just my take because the NFL is a rotating carousel when it comes to head coach hires. The flip side of that is the Dallas Cowboys who hold on to everybody for way too long. The quarterback, I feel like every quarterback and coach they have, there is a solid 4 year run up the length between two Olympic 100%. Games.
He is where, not paid. Coach to not coach. He is not going to fire a coach.
It's absolutely unbelievable. And I can see it happening again with Brian Schottenheimer. Like right away. I don't know a single person who looks at this and goes, that's a good hire. That's a good fit. It's innovative. It works, you know, with what we're trying to do here. It is just a retread nepotism, family name kind of hire. And he's going to come in. He's going to be the head coach for 12 years. And for 9 of those years, we're going to be like, they're going to fire him, right? And they will not. They just won't. That's what is going to happen there. The only other one that I really want to jump on and talk about here, and I'm going to leave the Bears for you because I know, although spoiler alert, I really do like that hire. Here's what I'll say about Pete Carroll. I think Pete Carroll is an excellent coach. I think that is a bad fit. I think the Raiders' expectations are way too high for the reality of their roster. I think that the Raiders are bringing in Pete Carroll because they think he can win a Super Bowl. And I don't think they're a win now team. And I don't think he's at an age where you're like, this is our guy for the next 7 or 8 years. So I don't understand the fit unless they binge Ted Lasso and they're like, we could take a shitty team and just get a really positive, fun guy in here. And like, we'll turn this whole fucking thing around. That's the only logic I can come up with. Otherwise, I think they should really be looking at somebody, you know, maybe a little bit younger who's going to be around for more of the long haul. Although Pete Carroll could coach till he's 100. He's got a young spirit. I don't know. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, people always say that about Pete Carroll. I actually disagree with you on that one. And there's like a little thing that happened with the Pete Carroll hire that I think should be a little bit more of a trend. And this is something that I wish would have happened in Jacksonville, for instance. Hiring Pete Carroll for the Raiders, maybe he only lasts like 3 years, coaches till he's 76, 77 years old. I think he's got a 3-year deal with the option on the fourth year from the team. So maybe he only coaches 3 years. At the end of those 3 years, I would bet money that Pete Carroll will have established a better organization, right? They're not going to win a Super Bowl while Pete Carroll's there. They're not. He's too old. There's no quarterback to speak of. There's nothing there right now for them to win a Super Bowl. But that building will be left better because Pete Carroll was in it. And I think that's something that the Raiders have needed for a really, really long time. Like, they were trying to do that with Gruden. And the problem is that Gruden is a PUD. He's not a good person. Pete Carroll, good guy. Like, all the players are going to love him. All the players are going to remember playing for Pete Carroll. That's how people talk about him as a leader, is that people are going to remember playing for Pete Carroll. And I think a steady hand for a few years is the thing that some of these organizations really needed. Like, you talk about the Jacksonville job. My God. We're not going to fire our GM. And then a guy like Ben Johnson says, okay, well, then I'm not even going to talk to you. And then then Liam Cohen comes in. Liam Cohen's going to take the job. And he goes, just kidding. I'm going to go back to Tampa Bay and be the highest paid offensive coordinator. And then the Jags are like, fine, we'll fire the GM. And then they fire the GM, and then they bring in Liam Cohen. And now there's no general manager. So whoever so they whoever bring, they bring in didn't even hire Liam Cohen.
That went, remember the word ineptly run organization.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, so, like, I look at the hire with, like, Pete Carroll, and I'm like, that makes sense to me, and he'll get his run. Whatever he wants his run to be, he's earned that he's going to have a nice run being the head coach. Whether it's 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, he'll get to the end of when he says, I don't want to coach anymore. Right? That'll happen. The Jags, like you said, they're going to be looking for a new coach in 2 years because the GM didn't even pick the guy. So the GM's going to come in, look at 2 years. These players are not going to play for a guy that embarrassed himself like that at the press conference. They're already not excited. I guarantee you they're already not excited. I already get Matthew Stafford vibes from Trevor Lawrence's career. I'm like, you're going to be the guy who everybody's like, oh, man, that guy – he's like pretty good, but never really had any sort of good coaching and never had a good team around him. So he's like really talented, but he can't really. And then he gets with Sean McVay and wins the Super Bowl immediately. In fact, that's probably what the Rams are going to do when Matthew Stafford is done playing. They're just going to be like, okay, we're going to trade for Trevor Lawrence now and we're going to win like three straight Super Bowls or something like that. I like what the Jets did. I hate the Jets. The Jets don't make any sense to me. Hiring Aaron Glenn. You're trying to kind of capture that same thing with Pete Carroll, where it's like, let's get somebody in here that is going to write this fucking shit show. Now, here's the thing. Aaron Glenn's first big decision is with Aaron Rodgers. And if Aaron Glenn keeps Aaron Rodgers, I will have a lot less faith in what Aaron Glenn is going to be. That 1 year, I think, can destroy the whole thing.
All I'll say about this is use the phrase, that's his first big decision. It's not his first difficult decision.
It is.
This is an easy decision. I can't believe I'm just assuming that everybody is saving face publicly by being like, yeah, we got to look at all our things. There's no way they're seriously thinking about bringing him back. Is there?
Man, I hope not. I hope not. And I don't know like who should even take that shit. Maybe Aaron Rodgers wants to go play for Pete Carroll. I would rather that situation because I know Pete Carroll is like a good enough head coach to like withstand that. I'm not putting my first time head coach into a situation where he has to coach Aaron Rodgers.
It'd be pretty funny if that forced Davante Adams to go back to the Raiders. Oh. Just like Jesus Christ. If you're Aaron Rodgers, you got your 500th touchdown, you've got a Super Bowl, you've had a great career. Just retire. Go be the head of the CDC. You don't need to play quarterback anymore.
I know it.
You know, there's so much out there for you.
The whole world is telling you, go be an important weirdo. And he won't just go be an important weirdo.
This is a golden age for important weirdos.
Oh, my God. Important
you're killing weirdos, it right now.
Important weirdos are on top of the world. And so, I'm not sure why he doesn't want to be a senator or whatever. But this football thing has got to end. Now, I have to get to it, right? The Bears hired Ben Johnson. I'm going to start with this. I don't think anybody cannot like the hire, okay? The Bears went out and they got the guy that was the hot name for at least two straight cycles, maybe three straight cycles. People have wanted Ben Johnson to be their head coach for a really long time. Now, there's all the caveats. Can he stand in front of the room and be a head coach? Can he coach a whole football team? Can he do all those things? All I know is anytime you hire anybody who's a first-time head coach, it's a risk. It's a lot less of a risk when the guy you hire to be a head coach has run the number one offense, not for 1 year, for three straight. And I know, oh my God, the talent gap between the Detroit offensive line and the Bears offensive line. I know. Oh my God, Jared Goff, a veteran quarterback. Caleb Williams, he'll be going into year two. It's a complex offense. I know. But the fact of the matter is, this guy had Jared Goff looking like an MVP candidate. This guy turned Amon-Ra St. Brown into one of the best wide receivers in football. Tandem backfield of David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, both of those guys going over 1,000 yards this year. He's got tight ends catching touchdown, or he's got offensive tackles catching touchdown passes and running stupid trick plays, one of which bit him in the ass in the playoffs there. But look, you know, that's still a game. You know, people are talking about that game, and it's like, well, they scored 31 points and had over 500 yards of total offense. I don't even remember if I've ever seen the Bears score 31 points and have 500 total yards of offense. Anytime I see the Bears score 31 points, it's because, you know, Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and Charles Tillman returned interceptions for touchdowns or something like that. It's not a normal thing in Chicago. So I can't not like the hire. Am I worried? Yes, but I would have been worried about anybody that they hired.
Of course.
Because it's the Bears. At the end of the day, it's still the Bears. And I'll tell you this, I'll enjoy next year. Like, they could go 12-5 next year, and I'll really, really enjoy that. And I'll enjoy it for what it is, which is that one season. But I also remember that I watched Matt Nagy go 12-4 in his first season, and then look what happened after that. So I hope that this is a coach that has staying power. I hope that this is a coach that finally can be here for a while and turn the Bears around from being the team that, quite frankly, should be mentioned in the same way that the Browns and the Raiders and the Jets are mentioned. Okay? They should be in the same they shouldn't even be mentioned in the same breath as the Cowboys. Right? It hasn't even been a stretch of mediocrity. There's no stretch. It's just been bad. And so I'm hopeful that there is some consistency coming to Chicago, but my God, do I need to see it before I take my pants off.
And listen, if it wasn't for the Super Bowl shuffle and the skit on SNL, you guys would be talked about with the Browns. That's literally the only deciding factor. Those two things. 100%. Other than that, a 40-year-old comedy sketch is the only thing saving you guys from complete irrelevance. I feel confident in saying this. I will not predict any wins or losses or successes in terms of victories or Super Bowls. I think the Bears are going to have their first ever 4,000 passing yard quarterback.
Wow. Do you think at some point they're going to have their first ever 30 touchdown quarterback too?
Let's not get crazy.
Okay. Thank you. That's the kind of thing I need. I need you to even me out when I'm about. You saw I started grabbing the edge of the table.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. That's how you get really depressed Jeff up in this podcast. And while those days are fun, we don't love to have them. I don't love to have them.
No, but the comment section is going to start. They're going to want depressed Jeff. If you guys weren't on the last podcast, it's a fun ride. So
yeah, depressed Jeff is a blast. I have a feeling that the Cubs might deliver, and I certainly think that the Bulls might deliver. And speaking of delivery, Pat, can I tell you about something?
Sure.
Did you know that Graham and Fist Wine in a Can will deliver wine straight to your door? You can order online.
I did know that.
Did know that? That's good. I love that. People out you did you know that? Did you, the Statement Game fan, know that? I don't think you did. All right, you go to grahamandfist.com, you look in, they got a bunch of varieties now, even more. They're adding all the time. I think this year they came out with like a Moscato, and they came out with a Sauve Blanc and a Cab Sauv. They got all sorts of different flavors now. They have the typical red, which is my favorite, the white with bubbles, which is my second favorite, the rosé with bubbles, and they got those three new ones. I've heard tell that there may be more in the future as well, but you can get this stuff delivered right to your door. Each can is a glass and a half of wine. It's a perfect serving, right? You overserve yourself. You have one of those cans. You're feeling good already. You have two of those cans. You're making a bunch of friends at the bar. You know what I mean? So, ladies and gentlemen, please go to grahamandfist.com. Next time I do this promo, I'm going to tell you right now, because I know they're listening, we're going to have a promo code for you, and you're going to get a percentage off your first order, and you're going to type in Pat and Jeff, and we're going to see if we can get some wine out to our listeners. Maybe in the future we'll do a contest. We'll send you wine out. just for you being a good listener. I don't know. I'm really excited to be partnering with those guys, and I'm hoping, you know, if you've got some Graham and Fist stuff, you know, they're in Dave and Buster's, they're in, you know, back from my, they're in old Chicago. They're in a bunch of different places. So find yourself some Graham and Fist, or just go to their website, have them deliver it right to your door. They'll show up, the FedEx guy, you'll show your ID, you'll take in your wines, and yeah, you'll be a hit, right? Have a party, put the cans of wine out. People go, what's this? This is new. They crack it open. They're like, you know what? Let me tell you, this is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good wine right here.
Yeah, you have a party. You put out some Bud Lights or what? Nobody cares. It's not a conversation starter.
No, you put out some Graham and Fisk. They go, who the fuck are Graham and Fisk?
You're like, how much time you got, buddy? Let me tell you.
What do they know about wine? Plenty. Okay. They know plenty about wine. All right. I wanted to talk about this. We sort of touched on this topic a little bit last week, but a big change happened in the, it seemed like it was going to be a really sleepy NBA trade deadline. And look, it probably still will be, like, just really hard to make trades in the NBA right now. But a big piece of news came down in that the Sacramento Kings are now open to trading De'Aaron Fox, which means De'Aaron Fox's agent said, hey, you're open to trading De'Aaron Fox right now. Apparently, now Fox already has like a team in mind, and he only has like a year and a half left on his deal. So, you know, some teams may be wary about trading for him, but then I thought about it and I was like, isn't this the exact same situation that the Toronto Raptors were in before they traded for Kawhi Leonard from the Spurs? And I was like, no, Jeff, it's even better actually, because this is two playoff runs and not one. So my question to you is, do you think De'Aaron Fox is good enough to have that Kawhi Leonard type of impact on any of these teams that are trying to compete for an NBA Finals, right? Is there somebody who's not quite there that all of a sudden De'Aaron Fox turns into an actual contender for the NBA championship?
Yes and no. I don't think he's capable of having the Kawhi level, a Kawhi Leonard level of impact, because Kawhi Leonard, when healthy, and people forget this because it's not often, is one of the greatest players to ever play basketball on both sides of the ball. De'Aaron Fox is not going to make the same impact as 2019 Kawhi Leonard. It's just not going to happen. That being said, 2019 was a very different time in the NBA, where seemingly the same two teams were going to win it every year until all of us died. The NBA is much more wide open now. So while he can't have as great of an impact because he's not as great of a player, he can actually percentage-wise have more of an impact because there's more teams that are close, in my opinion. I think there are a lot of teams that could really benefit from De'Aaron Fox. And the beautiful thing is, if you're able to trade for him, and here's another reason that I like it almost more than the Kawhi Leonard thing, is because A, you get the two playoff runs, B, his options are going to be very limited in terms of where he can go. And he's controlled this narrative a lot better, I think, than a lot of NBA players. Shout out to his PR team, because you're right. When they say they're shopping him, that means that his agent is like, hey, you better shop him. He's not going to sign here. He's not going to sign here. They asked De'Aaron Fox, do you have a preferred destination? And he said, yes, I do. But at no point did he come out and say, I want to be traded. I'm demanding to be traded. I'm demanding to be traded here. All of the things that get NBA players, you know, hate from the public, he avoided all of that, even though it's essentially what he's doing. Now, from anybody you talk to, that preferred destination is San Antonio. He wants to play with Wembanyama, right? Knowing that he has a preferred destination, knowing that the majority of teams are not going to have the cap space to sign him to a long-term deal, but the San Antonio Spurs are one of the teams that does, what that's going to do is it's going to lower the asking price. It's going to drive down the leverage that the Kings have. They're not going to be able to get as many good offers because not as many teams are going to be willing to go in. So if you are one of those teams that's willing to go in, knowing very, very possibly you're only going to get him for 2 years, you can get him at, relatively speaking, I feel like, a bargain basement price, because the only team you're really competing with is San Antonio. You're not competing with another 20 to 25 teams. I really feel like that price is going to be, relatively speaking, pretty low for a player as good as De'Aaron Fox. And if I had a team where I thought he would make sense and he could push us over the edge, I would absolutely be... I would trade two firsts and, you know, some matching salaries and role players for De'Aaron Fox. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it may end up more than that because of, you know, the reported favorite destination, right? If he wanted to go, let's say, to Miami, which could be because the world isn't fair, it suppresses the asking price even more. But here's the thing. Like if I'm an owner and I'm in position where I look at my roster and I say to myself, you know, over 2 years, if I had a primary ball handler that's great in transition, plays on the defensive end, he's not a great defender, but he plays hard. Not the best outside shooter, but he takes them and makes them at a respectable rate. But he's a blur, so fast, good playmaker. He's a star. He's a star player. If I think that, like, oh man, that's it, I am making the move, and I'm fine doing, you know, firsts and whatever for, and you know, maybe a young player and, you know, role players, whatever it has to be to get De'Aaron Fox. Yes, of course I would do that deal. The issue is, and this is, the Spurs being involved is a great thing for the Kings, because there's only one team in the entire NBA that can come over the top on the San Antonio Spurs on a trade offer, and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And obviously, De'Aaron Fox isn't going to the Oklahoma City Thunder. The great thing would be if there was a star available and both of those teams wanted that star, because then we're talking about a trade offer that's got like seven first round picks in it, and it's very fun. But having the Spurs be in there, I think the preferred destination thing, the idea is that you would keep it cheap for the team that you're going to. I don't know if it's going to be that cheap for the Spurs, but here's the thing. They have like 30 first round picks over the next 7 years. So they're not going to, it's not going to hurt them, really. They can this trade and another trade for a giant star. They could do that.
That's fair, and you're not wrong. And with, you know, Popovich being where he's at in his coaching career, they probably don't want to wait another year and a half to get De'Aaron Fox. And all of that is accurate. I have seen it work both ways. If you look at Anthony Davis, his trade value went way up because the Lakers were like, that's our guy and we want him now.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Kawhi Leonard, it was a known secret that he wanted to play in Los Angeles.
Yep.
There was a reason that the Lakers or Clippers didn't really go in the same way that the Raptors did, because they're like, we'll get him next year. It's fine. He's coming here. The Spurs might not have that luxury. So while I could see it working either way, and it has worked in both directions in the past, I think that in this particular case, you're probably right, and the Spurs are probably going to want to get him this year. Because, by the way, you put him in this year with this Spurs team, I don't think they're going to win it all, but it's not the craziest thing I've ever heard.
I would say simply, I don't want to play that team.
Yes, that's a great way to play
that team in the playoffs. Hell no. Mm-mm. No, that's a hell of a tandem. And with all those picks coming up, and additionally, you know, they're still going to have space. They're still going to have a bunch of picks to trade for, you know, the third guy if they want the third guy. And they'll be able to wait out who the third guy is too, right? You can be nice and picky and find exactly who you want. That is the scariest proposition, him going there, I think, for the rest of the league. And I also think it's most likely. Anything else, like, as the trade deadline's coming up, you know, the names that are getting tossed around, first of all, feel like retreads from last trade deadline. Anything else that would really feel like any sort of a needle mover for you. Like, I don't want to keep bringing up like Chicago guy. We've known Zach LaVine has been out there for a really long time. He's having a wonderful year. We've known Nikola Vucevic is out there for a really long time. He's having a wonderful year. Apparently the Bulls are open for business. You got a lot of players over there. You've got like Jonas Valanciunas. You've got Jimmy Butler. You've got Cam Johnson from the Nets. You know, there's some interesting pieces, but I'm just wondering if, because of how the NBA works right now, is somebody looking at Cam Johnson, who's a really nice player. He's a really, really nice player. Nice stretch four, defense, and all those sorts of things. Is somebody looking at him and being like, we're a Cam Johnson away.
I think if they are, they're foolish. There's a difference between impact players and guys who can make an impact. There's a bunch of guys who can make an impact. But when you talk about like impact player in terms of like this person comes in and significantly alters the trajectory of the season, I won't say the franchise, but the season, I don't know that any of these guys are that. They're, like you say, there's pieces, and I know you don't want to touch on the Bulls thing. I mean, I feel like over the course of our last podcast, we had this conversation. Our podcast started in, what, 2017? Deadline since 2017, Zach LaVine was available by the Bulls, even when he wasn't on the Bulls yet. It's amazing. To me, it's just like, dude, I feel like this has been going on forever. There were so many concerns about his contract and his knees and everything like that. And he just keeps, you know, keeps putting up numbers, and he's a great scorer. And I think that he would probably be the best, you know, remaining name. And I know you're sick of like talking about it, but the reality is, as you know, as much as we've said it before, he could be an impact player. He could be that guy for a franchise. He's the only one outside of De'Aaron Fox that I see filling that role. Vucevic and Valanciunas, they're fine. They're going to help. But they're not needle movers to that degree, no.
Yeah, Zach's contract has always been the thing that's been in the way of this whole thing. And, you know, because of the CBA, that's just sort of how it is. Zach's a great example of why this CBA is just so terrible, because you know, he played his way off this team, and he can't get off this team, right? Because he's making too much. He's making $43 million, and it's like, this is a guy that scores you 24, you know, goes 24-5-5 on, you know, 50-45-85 from the floor. Like, he's a ridiculous offensive player. He at least has tried more on defense. I mean, you can backdoor cut him all day, but if he's in a one-on-one situation, he'll put up a little bit of a fight. He's trying to get out of there. He's really trying to get out of there. I even loved the new method that Clutch had him do, which was to come out and be like, I actually want to be in Chicago past the trade deadline. Perfect thing to say to try to get traded. So, I mean, I hope for his sake he gets to play like meaningful basketball. But then again, I think, like, you know, guy's 30, 31 years old. And I know a lot of his game is based off, you know, that first step and athleticism and his hops, which he still has. Do I think that's going away in 2 years when his contract is up? No. So I do think Zach is eventually going to be able to play a lot of meaningful basketball. And I think that he's going to make a lot of money being a guy that just plays off stars and buries fucking threes. And sometimes in transition runs out and just hammers a dunk home. Like, he's going to have a nice thing. I don't know if the Bulls are ever going to be able to trade him to get any sort of value, because I'm not trading him if I'm not getting anything, right? If I'm just getting salary filler.
Right.
I want something. And so if that's not going to happen, you know, I don't know. And considering how low the asking price is, that's another thing with the CBA, is like, considering how low the asking price is, like, that guy should be on another team, right? The asking price is like a late first round pick and stuff to get them out of the contract early. Like, he should be able to go play for somebody else for that. You know what I mean? But because of the CBA, he can't really do that. And so we'll see how it ends up. I do think he could have a little bit more of an impact on the team than people make it out. I think people have made too big a deal of like his injury history and all those sorts of things. Zach's a really good offensive player. There's not many offensive players that are better than Zach LaVine. He's probably top 15 offensively in the league.
$44 million. I'm going to throw a couple grenades in there before we exit the segment, because I know we're wrapping up talking about this, and it feels, the reason I didn't do it this sooner is because it feels a little bit hot takey. We discussed the realistic names, and I said I'm not super impressed by any of them. I'm going to give you two names that I don't think will be traded, but I would love it if they were traded.
Okay.
Trae Young and Kevin Durant.
Okay, so if I was, there's only one team in the entire NBA that I would pull a trade for Trae Young, and that is the Orlando Magic, because everybody else on the floor defends. Okay, and if I'm going to have Trae Young, I need everybody else on the floor to defend, or else, you know, it doesn't work. And Trae, you know, the thing is, Trae has, like, I feel like Trae, people look at him like a little bit like Steph. And it's like, bro, he's not even in the same fucking zip code as a shooter. There's a lot of better shooters than, you know, he's a 36% 3-point shooter. That's not a guy that's elite at the thing. Great passer, great all those things. The only team, if I'm running the team, If I'm that specific team, I maybe make that deal. But, man, I am worried about what he is defensively and everywhere else.
Yeah, of course.
Durant's interesting. Phoenix has got to shit or get off the pot at some point. It seems like they're going to try to push forward, and they're really trying to get Jimmy Butler right now, and that's where he wants to go, and there's all those things. And I guess that's the, you know, that's the get out of jail free card. At any time, we can trade Devin Booker, we can trade Kevin Durant, and we'll get all our picks back and all that sort of stuff. Boy, I would love a Kevin Durant trade. Now that changes the league.
That's
the league changing.
Yeah, see, now that's the fun thing. This is, you know, you're sitting around 500. You might get Jimmy Butler, you might not. If it seems like you're not. And you can't do it, because the team's got enough talent where the fans will revolt if you make this trade. And I get it. You can't do it. You didn't build all this time and get so close just to like deal them in a pretty open like Western Conference where the best teams are unproven in the playoffs. And I understand all that. I get it. But it would be fun.
It would be really fun, because I mean, I'd also like. It's a better league when Kevin Durant is playing some meaningful basketball. He's a wonderful player, and you know, shines bright in the brightest moments. So I don't know. I would love that. That'd be my favorite thing. If just randomly they were like, "Well, shit, we're not going to be able to get Jimmy Butler. This is going to be like another season down the tubes. Let's just like flush this toilet, get some picks back." Yeah. You could even if you're them. You can make that move and then go get another star in the offseason again. Just like a different one if you wanted to, like a younger one to pick maybe a better fit with Devin Booker. Like, I don't know why that's not working as well as it should. Now you have me like talking myself into the fact that like all I'm going to be praying for is Kevin Durant on the trail.
He's the most underrated player in NBA history.
Oh, what a take. You're going to say,
I save all my hot takes for the end of the segment when it's like, we got to go. We can't discuss this. But that's something I'm willing to argue in the future, and I will stand by.
You did it a little bit. Tell the folks about the Roast Battle League, Pat. Plug it out.
Yeah, Roast Battle League. We just crowned a world champion, and we're starting our new season. Unlike other sports, we have the championship, and then the season starts up again a month later, because I am a psycho, and I don't value my personal time at all. I run this league. We have Roast Battles in 16 cities across the world. As part of our, you know, main league, and we've added this year a secondary league with 8 other cities. So it's there's all sorts of content. If you like comedians, you know, writing really funny and mean jokes about each other, it's how Jeff and I both met each other. It's a big part of our past. Go to roastbattleleague.com for more info. I apologize for the sports fans out there. We have this really like well-run league, but I don't know anything about social media, so it's not always presented in the clearest way. We're working on that, but the new season starts March 1st, so check it out.
Yeah, and probably on the Statement Game Instagram, I think we should start throwing up some Roast Battle League stuff. People love you for that. We should have you on there. We should start throwing that stuff up there, too, so people can get a look and then hopefully follow the account from there. All right, I'm super excited to do this. We used to do this every year. Back when we were Pat and Jeff Like Sports, we used to every year around this time, and because it's around this time is because Saturday is the Royal Rumble, the WWE Royal Rumble, which is one of the most, one of the most fun sports events of the year. I don't even think it's a question. I'll be watching. I imagine Pat will be watching as well. It's a great event. If you don't know how it works, is they have two of their wrestlers start in the ring and they fight for a while. And then every 60 seconds, another wrestler comes in, all the way up to 30 of them. And then how you get eliminated is you get thrown over the top rope until one person is standing. That's the winner of the Royal Rumble. They get to go and challenge the champion at WrestleMania for the big belt. And so that's how the Royal Rumble works. So we used to do that, and we used to pick whoever Pat and Jeff's guy was over that next year. Who's the guy? Joel Embiid was a winner. I believe Shohei Ohtani won. No, wait. Ohtani won. I think Joe Burrow was always in second place. There have been different guys that were going to be the Pat and Jeff guys, but we're going to change it up. We're not going to have a guy. What I want you to do, I thought this was actually a little bit more apt. We're going to go through 2024 sports moments, things that happened in sports, and I want you to throw each one of these out over the top rope now and again, and we're going to come to the best sports moment from 2024. You ready to go?
Yes, and real quick, the fun thing about doing it this way as compared to just like sitting here and arguing the best one might not win. If you think about it, you draw number three in the Royal Rumble, you're in that ring for an hour?
That's right.
What are the odds that when it all, you know, comes down to the end, you're going to be, you know, on equal footing with the guy who drew number 30? Now, of course, professional wrestling being what it is, I feel like number one and number two and number three win way more than they would in real life. But you might give me my absolute favorite moment of the year at number two. And by the time we get to 20, it's got to go. It's because it's gassed. That happens. So
that definitely does happen. And I will say, like, we do have a Shawn Michaels level contender entering the Rumble at number one. You ready to go? OK, this is the moment that drew number one in the sports moment Royal Rumble. Steph Curry's Golden Dagger 3 in the Olympics to beat Paris for the gold. You remember that moment?
Yeah, I remember him hitting three of those.
Yeah, it was
about a minute.
It was so awesome. And he goes in with, I'm sorry to say, but a jobber. The Chiefs going back to back as Super Bowl champions. Oh, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So those are the first two that start off. We've got 60 seconds on the clock. Actually, you know what? We're going to cut it down. We're going to do 15 seconds on the clock.
15. Perfect. I'm not ready to eliminate either of these. People shit on the Chiefs because they're sick of Taylor Swift and they're sick of the referees, but that doesn't mean that winning back-to-back Super Bowls is not an amazing accomplishment. And of course, the Steph Curry Dagger 3, that's going to be in this for a little bit. So they're both still in.
They're both still in and coming to the ring right now. Oh my God, that is the UConn men's basketball team. They say, hey, you know what, Chiefs? You're not the only ones to go back-to-back. We also went back-to-back as national championship. The UConn men's basketball team enters the ring with Steph Curry's Golden Dagger 3 and the Chiefs back-to-back Super Bowls.
This feels like sometimes they do the Rumble where like the first two guys are like really big names, and then number three is always just some jobber who comes in to get his ass kicked for a few minutes and get thrown out. I'll let the UConn men's team hang on for a second, but they're not long for this world.
I don't think they're long for this world either. I actually think right now walking to the ring is a real contender. walking to the ring right now, Pat, Freddie Freeman's walk-off grand slam in game one of the World Series with two outs in the bottom of the 10th, first pitch off Nestor Cortez.
Wow. We got some major star power in this ring right now. Sometimes when, you know, a big name comes out, the first thing they do is like immediately toss someone over the top rope to establish their dominance. Goodbye, UConn men's team. You are gone. The other three are definitely remaining, and they're going to be around for a little bit.
But like those first two are definitely hanging on to the ropes and like breathing heavily already. That's what's going on right now. Into the ring right now, Pat, Sabrina Ionescu and the New York Liberty win their first WNBA championship. Breonna Stewart wins one for her home state. They enter the ring at number 5.
I don't think they're long for the world either, because anytime you win the championship in your sport and you're not even close to the biggest story in your sport, and the biggest story is someone who barely even made the playoffs in the first place, just historically, you're not long for this rumble. I will say at this point, looking at who is in the ring, the Chiefs and the Dodgers are heels in wrestling parlance. Those are the bad guys.
Yeah.
So the Steph Curry Dagger 3 is taking a beating from two of the premier like villains in this thing. WNBA coming to his rescue. Ionescu and Curry, they have the history in the three-point shootout. They're trying to make the save. It's not going great, but they're still in it for now.
We're going to tip it a little bit, I think, for the good guys here. Like this one right here to me is like when like Rey Mysterio comes out, right? It's a guy that's like, that guy's probably not going to win the Rumble, but he's going to do a bunch of flips and shit, and it's going to be awesome for a little bit. Because walking to the ring right now to join Steph Curry's Golden Dagger 3, the back-to-back Super Bowl champion Chiefs, Freddie Freeman's walk-off, the New York Liberty as champions, is Saquon Barkley's reverse hurdle.
Oh, my God. Okay, I thought you were going to say Simone Biles with all the flips and everything. okay, so, first of all, I'm going to start by telling you a joke that I wrote. I had to write for an NFL roast that was untelevised. And I said, did you guys see Saquon Barkley's reverse hurdle where he went backwards and jumped over that guy like ass first? Like, people said that that had never been done in the NFL, but that's not true. That's how Odell Beckham used to enter Diddy parties. One of my favorite jokes I've ever written, because the image of Odell Beckham jumping ass first into a Diddy party is so funny to me.
It's quite perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is another one that hangs out for, you know, a little bit, because like, you know, these, the one thing that the Chiefs lack, and here's why they're starting to struggle now, is they lack that defining moment, that image. The Freddie Freeman one has an image. The Steph Curry one has an image. This is absolutely an image that you will see for years and years and years. Yeah, this is a strong contender. I'm going to go ahead and eliminate, the WNBA champions, and, we're back down to 4 now.
That's good. We're back down to 4, but here coming to the ring right now, it is Novak Djokovic, the tennis player, finally winning a gold medal to cap off the Golden Slam. Perhaps the greatest tennis player of all time wins the elusive gold medal, this last year, heading to the ring.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for tennis to compete kind of on this level.
Yeah, but you got to throw them in.
Yeah, of course. I'm not saying they don't belong here.
It's the biggest nod I can give them, is even putting them in this thing.
I'm not saying they don't belong here. I'm just saying, with the exception of a few, and maybe it's because I'm American and he's not, because Lord knows Serena Williams and Tiger Woods captured my attention in individual sports the way these damn Europeans can't. I out of respect to Joker, he's sticking around for now. He's throwing some forehands and some backhands and hitting some people.
All right, I think I got one that might be a quick in and quick out, because this is like one of those ones where like the WWE is trying to make this young wrestler happen, and the crowd is just like, why are you pushing this guy? Like, what do we care about this guy? This is Jaden Daniels, Commanders, the Hail Mary at the end of the game that beat the Bears and subsequently broke the Bears franchise. That is walking to the ring right now.
First of all, I love how you try to downplay this one. Like, oh yeah, this is a fucking loser moment when, you know, the Bears got embarrassed. Second of all, I love how you say that broke the Bears as if they were working to begin with. What a fucking disaster. And you're like, oh yeah, that's what it's like. When people blame Aaron Rodgers for ruining the Jets franchise, it's like, that's not all at his feet. Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave this in for 1 second for two reasons. Number one, I do think it's actually a really good clip. And number two, I think we're building up the... You know when they start building up the ring and there's like four or five guys who are ready to go and then like Kane comes out or whatever?
Yes.
I feel like that's around the corner. So I'm going to leave him in for now.
That might be around the corner. It's in a couple, but it might be there. I will say that I do think a big time heel is about to come to the ring. Coming to the ring right now, we have Caitlin Clark breaking the NCAA scoring record.
That's a heel to you?
I kind of. It would have been a heel if the Liberty were still in there, because I think she would have thrown them out, which is basically how the WNBA season works.
I see this completely differently. Caitlin Clark is the ultimate good guy.
Okay.
Steph Curry at this point, drawing number one. He's hanging on for dear life. Here comes Caitlin Clark for the save. To me, I don't know how anybody could look at Caitlin Clark and be like, that's the bad guy. Her team doesn't win. She's a superstar on a bad team. She has completely turned around the entire face of it. She's the face of the league. No. Caitlin Clark. You're way off on this one. She's a face. I'm going to leave everybody in for a minute, but somebody's got to go real soon, because we got seven in the ring now. It's too many.
All right. This is one I just wanted to mention. I don't know how long it'll stick around in the ring. But I wanted to mention specifically, the Detroit Tigers' improbable playoff run last year and Tariq Skubal's incredible season, like Cy Young level season. He's probably the best pitcher in baseball season. To get them there. That is what's coming to the ring right now. Just wanted to give a shout out to that specific team, because for me, maybe one of the most surprising sports teams of the season last year.
Sure. I'm not trying to be a dick. Didn't they go like 84 and 78 or something? Like, cool.
Yeah, they're also in that division, you know?
And they were, I get it, in July, they were like 0.1% chance to make the playoffs, and they went on this run and everything like this. I get it. This is a Bushwhacker Luke moment for me. It's not their time yet. Skubal comes running out and immediately gets, you know, the trademark Freddie Freeman uppercut swing knocks him right over the fucking top rope. He's out in 5 seconds. Try again next year.
Okay, we go back to happier times for Detroit Lions fans. The Lions host their first playoff game in 30 years. And you know what they do in that playoff game? They beat a Matthew Stafford-led Rams team 24-23 in that game. That's what's walking to the ring right now.
I love it. It's you know, this is the face to counteract the heel that is the Chiefs, and they're not as good, but they're a house of fire. You know, that guy comes in, he's just like punching everybody and hitting his finisher on everybody. That's what the Lions are doing right now. We know how it's going to end, because it always does, because they're the Lions. But right now, ooh, boy, howdy. 1984 Dusty Rhodes.
Quick recap as, oh my goodness, who's that? What's that sound? That's the Michigan Wolverines winning the national championship, walking to the ring right now. Just a quick recap of who's in the ring. Steph Curry's Golden Dagger 3, the Chiefs' back-to-back Super Bowls, Freddie Freeman's walk-off Grand Slam, Saquon Barkley's reverse hurdle, Novak Djokovic's gold medal, Jaden Daniels' Hail Mary, Caitlin Clark's scoring record for the NCAA, the Lions hosting their first playoff game and beating Matt Stafford, and now the Michigan Wolverines football team winning the national championship. Go. What's going on now?
Okay, so here's what we have right now. Djokovic and Jaden Daniels, double clothesline type of thing, they're both out. Okay. They land on the floor. They start yelling at each other. All the refs run over. The Chiefs get thrown over the top rope, but the refs don't see it.
Oh!
And they sneak back in, and the whole crowd is like, what? These fucking refs. So, yeah, Djokovic, Jaden Daniels, Hail Mary are out. I'm not being, you know, as a Michigan fan, I was happy that they won the championship, but like, it wasn't like a landmark victory that's going to stick around for forever. So.
Wow.
Still strong. Okay.
I'm curious as to how strong this next one is going to be for you, because it would be strong for me, but I'm not sure how strong it would be for you, because walking to the ring right now, we have current WWE champion Cody Rhodes finishing his story at WrestleMania. Even if you are not a wrestling fan, if you just go watch that match, it is the most pure pro wrestling match I've maybe ever seen in my life. Just one of the best matches I've ever seen. So I'm curious, Cody Rhodes finishing his story at WrestleMania is walking to the ring. How are we feeling about it?
I'm an old school wrestling fan. I tune in every now and then, you know, or I catch a lot of the big like highlights on social media and everything like that. And I will tell you this. I was told this Cody Rhodes guy, you got to see him. He's incredible. He's one of the greats, especially on the mic. Oh my God. I have never been more bored by a motherfucker. I don't care about anything he says. I think he sucks. I think his finisher is stupid. That little like whirly bird spin cycle bullshit that he does. I think it's convoluted. I think it's dumb. I don't like really anything about him that I've seen. And I'm sure I'm missing all the good stuff. But when they were like, you gotta see this guy. The one interview I watched, they put him in the ring with Paul Heyman. And they had like a mic battle or whatever. And he got destroyed. He's nowhere near that level. He's boring. He stinks. I hate him. And you know what? Caitlin Clark just body slammed him over the top rope and through the announce table.
Oh, God.
Not a fan. Not a fan at all.
Did you ever see that match though?
Which one?
The Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, with all the like interference and like everybody running out at the end.
It's funny because you talking about his finisher, that was one of the things that happened in the match, is Roman Reigns hit him with his own finisher and then covered him and Cody Rhodes kicked out and Roman Reigns literally said what you said, which was like, that move is stupid. It doesn't ever work.
It stinks.
Yeah. Okay. This is an interesting one. Walking to the ring right now is Josh Allen's touchdown triple crown. If you'll remember earlier in the football season, Josh Allen threw, ran for, and caught a touchdown pass in the same game this year for the Bills. So that's walking to the ring right now.
I had forgotten about that. That's more of like a unique oddity type of situation. I don't think it's anywhere close to like moment of the year. But this is another fun thing where Josh Allen comes in. We just had, so keep in mind what the Chiefs are doing right now. They've been eliminated. The referee missed it. The Lions threw him over the top rope. The referees missed it. The crowd's upset. They've been here since number two. They're hanging on to the bottom rope. They're pulling all these heel tactics. You had the big crowd pop when the Lions came out and they, you know, they went crazy on the Chiefs. That has died down. Now here comes Josh Allen to go crazy on the Chiefs. And everybody's like, is this the time that they finally get over the top? So right now, nobody gets eliminated, but Josh Allen is wailing on Patrick Mahomes in the corner.
Ah, all right. I like that. Yeah, people are feeling good about Josh Allen wailing on Patrick Mahomes right now, but mm-hmm. We all know how that ends. Coming to the ring right now, the NBA championship win for the Boston Celtics. Uh-oh.
I think along the same lines of Michigan, and to show that I'm doing this down the line, I'm a Michigan fan and I'm a Boston Celtics hater. They're both kind of just, you know, whatever. If the Celtics win like another two and it becomes like part of a like a trilogy or whatever, okay. The Celtics do nothing for me. I don't think that they're like enjoyable to watch. And yeah, it's there out of respect. It's not gone yet, but it's not lasted long.
Okay. Well, I feel like this is like the Undertaker's music hitting right now. We are going to come into the ring right now is Victor Wembanyama's debut NBA season. If you want to break it down to a specific day, how about the 5x5? On Halloween when he had, double digit points, assists, rebounds, was it steals and blocks? I don't remember what the fucking five categories were, but he put like, it was like a 5x5 instead of a triple double. But Victor Wembanyama's debut NBA season is coming down the ramp.
Yeah, this is tough because it's not really like a moment, like a snapshot in your brain, which I think will cost him. But this is definitely the monster bad guy spot where he comes out. And by the way, he's a bad guy strictly because he's French. I love him, and I think there's nothing to dislike about him. But in wrestling parlance, he's going to come out with a baguette. They're going to play some French music. He's going to like flip off the crowd and like tear up an American flag, and everybody's going to hate him. Caitlin Clark, she hangs on for a minute. Josh Allen is gone. Michigan is gone. The Lions' first playoff game is gone. Wemby comes out, eliminates three, kind of like right off the bat. And now, you know, and he does a thing where like Saquon Barkley tries to reverse hurdle him, but he gets caught in like some sort of devastating maneuver.
Okay, is Saquon?
He's too tall to reverse hurdle.
Did Saquon get thrown out?
No, he's still in there, but he's in a lot of pain.
He's grabbing his back and arching his back and whatnot. Yeah. This one, I got to tell you, when I saw that this drew 17, I thought this is a pretty good spot right here to win one. Mm-hmm. This one is the Shohei Ohtani game from this year where he ended up going 50-50. In this game, if you don't know, he was, you know, 40-something in steals, 40-something in home runs. And in this game, he got to both milestones to be the first 50-50 player. In the game, he went 6-for-6 with 10 runs batted in, 3 home runs, and 2 stolen bases.
It's the greatest game in baseball history. And yeah, I mean, this one's going to hang around for a while for sure. He's coming in, he's saving Freddie Freeman, who's gassed at this point. Was Freeman 3 or 4?
Freeman was 4.
So we got, 1, 2, and 4 are still in this thing. They're all feeling it. The thing about individual games is a lot of times you remember the numbers more than the images. And I don't know if that's going to come back to hurt him. The only iconic, like, all-time game that I can remember an image from is ironically the one we don't have any footage of. The image is Wilt holding up the piece of paper. It says 100.
Yep.
Crazy how that works. So Ohtani is he's in for now. We have 8 in the ring right now.
Okay, we have 8 in the ring right now. And coming in now, I don't know if we're going to make this like when Doink the Clown shows up. Or maybe this is the Bushwhacker moment, but this is Australian breakdancer Ray Gunn breakdancing in the Olympics.
Yeah. All right, so I wasted the Bushwhacker Luke spot a little bit early. This is clearly the one where the whole crowd is laughing, and then she comes in, and they all stop fighting each other to, like, back up against the ropes, and then she does her little, like, spin-a-roo. She does her whole routine, and then she stands up and immediately, like, everybody gangs up to just throw her over the top.
And there goes Ray Gunn. Come into the ring now. The Dodgers winning the World Series last year. That Dodgers World Series win.
I don't know how visually to process the Dodgers World Series win going up against Freddie Freeman's walk-off. Like, are they fighting each other? I don't know. That's kind of messy for me.
Even messier with the next entry.
Oh my God. All right, we'll leave it in. Tell me the next entry.
The next entry here comes Dodgers fans raining Modelo on Fernando Tatis Jr.
Wasn't it Jurickson Profar?
Oh, excuse me, Jurickson Profar. I'm sorry. It was, yeah, Fernando Tatis was the one that like puffed his chest out and then sucked. But yeah, it was Jurickson Profar. You're right. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. So we have a lot of hateable shit here. We got Steph Curry in the number one spot. He's damn near dead. We now have 4 Dodgers moments. And even though, like I say, I have tickets to the Dodgers and I like watching them play, I recognize they are the ultimate bad guy now. And you have the Chiefs. It's almost like the Celtics become a good guy by comparison. Same with Wemby. All right, we gotta clear the ring out a little bit. The Dodgers team up, the 4 moments team up to eliminate Wemby, just because when you have a guy that big, everybody has to like team up to eliminate him.
Okay.
I'll say that they get rid of Caitlin Clark too.
Oh, okay.
And Saquon Barkley is on, he's on the edge right now as the thing hits. Will it be somebody to save him?
Coming up next is the Minnesota Timberwolves coming back from down 20 in the second half of Game 7 to beat the Denver Nuggets and send them home.
Ooh, that was a great moment.
Sure was. But
great moment. Frankly, one that I had kind of forgotten about. We'll make this a feel-good thing where they come in and eliminate the Celtics.
Oh, they come in and get the Celtics, huh? Okay.
Yeah. So what number was that?
That was 21.
21. So we got 9 to go. We got 8 in the ring right now. Half of them Dodgers moments. Give me the next one.
Yeah, the next one. Good job by the randomizer here, actually, I think. Is Luka's step back 3 over Rudy Gobert to win game 2 for Dallas over the T-Wolves?
That's so funny. So you have to do it. It's a trope, but you have to do it. The Timberwolves throw out the Celtics, and then immediately Luka comes in and throws out the Timberwolves and replaces them. So, yeah, all right. That's easy.
Yeah, that was the he can't fucking guard me moment. Oh, man, that was so awesome.
And also, so that happens in the first, like, 10 seconds of Luka coming out. That's how that goes. In the remaining minute or whatever, the Chiefs are about to get thrown over the top rope, but Taylor Swift comes and distracts the ref, and the Chiefs, they jump back in again.
Perfect.
So it's now happened twice, and everybody is very upset.
That's perfect. I think we got a pretty big heavy hitter here. Next coming in is Simone Biles, gymnastics comeback. She came back for the gymnastics. She won the gold medal in the all-around, still proven to be in the running for, if not the best Olympic athlete ever.
Okay, so this is, yeah, when you said the Rey Mysterio spot earlier, I thought you were going with Simone Biles. We've kept Saquon Barkley in for this long. This seems like a good spot for her to come in. She's going to eliminate two of the Dodgers ones right off the bat because she's a fan favorite. Dodgers World Series win, out. Dodgers reigning beer on Profar, out. They are both out. The ring kind of like clears, and you have that moment between Biles and Saquon Barkley. And now they're doing one of those Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero flip jump over each other kind of things. And nobody's eliminated, but they get to do all their little flippy floppy bullshit.
Flippy floppy bullshit. And while they're doing flippy floppy bullshit, coming to the ring now, I'm interested on how you feel about this one. Coming to the ring now is Anthony Edwards' dunk over John Collins where both of them got hurt. Do you remember that dunk?
I don't.
Oh, okay. Because Pat doesn't remember this dunk, we're going to immediately eliminate this because it's not fair to have it hanging around in the ring. But we're going to use the time that we have, that 15 seconds. Everybody, as a homework assignment, you pause this podcast, you go to YouTube and look for this specific dunk because it was the most disgusting one to happen last year. Okay? So they are immediately eliminated, and taking their place is Gino Auriemma becoming the winningest basketball coach in NCAA Division I history.
I don't care. I truly don't care. Because the NIL will make it different now, but I've never given a fuck about college because you have your picket when you're great. It's like, yeah, all the women who are good at basketball want to play at UConn or Tennessee. You know how hard it is to win when all of the best players want to play there and there's no salary cap, there's no free agency, there's just no nothing. You just go, hey, you're really good, you want to play for me? And they go, yeah.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck, dude? Eliminate that one also. It's out.
All right. It's immediately out. Coming to the ring right now, I got a heel walking down the aisle, my friend. We have Jake Paul beating Mike Tyson in a boxing match.
Here's where you turn the crowd heat. You set it to nuclear. Here's what you do. You ready? I got this right here.
I'm ready.
Steph Curry is about to eliminate the Chiefs, and then Jake Paul sneaks up from behind and eliminates Steph Curry.
Oh, everybody thought Steph was going to win.
He's been in it the whole time. Jake Paul, And then Jake Paul does some absolute cowardly shit. Just like he's afraid he's going to get beat up by Simone Biles, so he's just hiding in the corner.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That's a big one.
But then, in the midst of hiding in the corner, he sneaks up and also eliminates Saquon Barkley.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, now the crowd is really pissed.
Now we have no idea who's going to win. I actually have no idea who's going to win. I'm not sure I have a winner coming up either. Coming to the ring right now is Travis Hunter's two-way Heisman season. Travis Hunter, the Colorado guy who plays wide receiver and cornerback and is the best at both of them, and he won the Heisman Trophy. Pretty rare for a quarterback to not win that award. Special season. Thought I'd reference it. He's coming to the ring.
Yeah, I actually like this one a lot. I don't know that. I mean, it drew a really good number, and it's truly like historic. And you know, things like that still hold weight years later. People still talk about like Charles Woodson, and like what Hunter did is like, you know, more impressive to me than what Woodson did. So when that happens so infrequently with a non-quarterback winning, I think that holds a lot of weight. So. That's in for sure.
All right, and then coming now is I'm not sure how you're going to feel about this one, but it is the moment of LeBron James and Bronny James taking the court together as teammates for the Lakers.
I love it.
Okay.
I'm writing all these down, by the way. I don't want anybody to think I'm like, oh, he's just over there texting. No. We're making a list. We're checking it twice. Bron and Bronny, I love it. Bronny has no business being in the NBA. It is complete nepotism. It's disgusting. It's vile. And he's taken up a spot that belongs to a more deserving player. That being said, as a dad, pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And I think ultimately when it boils down to it, if you're not a hater, you have to admit that it's pretty cool. I love the game where, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. took away the fly ball from his dad in the outfield. Yep. It's one of the all-time great moments. And did Ken Griffey Sr., was he still playing at a level where he should have been, you know, in there? I don't believe that he was, but nobody talks about that anymore. It's just cool. That one is still in.
Much like much of LeBron James' career, that may be something that you never see in the NBA again, ever, is like a father playing with a son. It's just not a very, like, likely thing to happen.
Yeah.
Coming, this is fun for me.
What number?
Coming up is his number 29. Here comes, oh my God, how could it be? It's Caitlin Clark, but this time she's setting the WNBA assists record in her first season.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. That's like, remember when Mick Foley entered three times?
Yeah, like the Dude Love and Cactus Jack and
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was worried that we weren't going to have any more quote unquote good guys, cuz we need a little bit of that. The ring is very heavily villains right now. So Caitlin Clark comes out and immediately eliminates Bronny because she's better at basketball than him. So that's, you know, and LeBron is just, they're eliminated, and LeBron is just screaming at him like he's J.R. Smith in the finals. Like, what are you fucking doing? How come you suck at this, right? we'll say that Caitlin Clark also eliminates Jake Paul in a really nice feel-good moment. And now we've kind of balanced things a little bit. Luka's a good guy. Simone Biles is a good guy. Caitlin Clark, good guy. Travis Hunter, sure. And then you have the three big heels still in it, the Chiefs. And then Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani.
Well, hate to add to tip the scales to the bad guys, but number 30 entering at the end here is the fact that both Bill Belichick and Nick Saban ended their respective relationships with their teams, Saban in Alabama, Belichick with the Patriots, in the same year. I believe it was the same week, too. I might be wrong about that, though.
Yeah, this one's tough because it doesn't feel like a singular moment as much as the other one.
I know. I was just trying to shoehorn him in.
You're trying. I respect it. Absolutely. All right. So, yeah, the Belichick thing is just like North Carolina. It kind of cheapens the whole deal to a degree. I don't know.
I'm not convinced he ever steps foot on that campus still.
Yeah, same. I'm not convinced of that either. I'm going to have Saban eliminate Travis Hunter because Travis Hunter stands for everything Saban, you know. The reason he bailed was because he didn't want to deal with the NILs. Okay. So I'm going to go with that. And then that one gets eliminated pretty quickly after that. I don't even know by who. So now we're down to six. We got the Chiefs back-to-back, Freeman walk-off slam. They've been in there forever. Otani 50-50. You know, Luka step-back three, Simone Biles, and Caitlin Clark. Here's the moment where the Dodgers turn on each other. Because you have to have a strong face in there. Now, the question is, they're going to turn on each other. One of them is going to make a turn in the middle of the match and become a good guy. The question is, which one? Who is legitimately more of a good guy? I think Otani, his worldly popularity would point to him. But nobody's ever had a bad word to say about Freddie Freeman. And if you remember, Freddie Freeman went through a lot this year. His son had a rare neurological disease where he couldn't move for a while. So I think this is a thing. And the Freeman walk-off slam has been in there for a while. So he's probably tired. Maybe he's not carrying his weight. And Otani's like, what are you doing? He's freaking out at him. And then he turns around and punches Otani in the fucking mouth. And the place goes crazy. The place goes crazy. So now what we're going to do is we're going to avoid, you know, some of the details. I'm going to get rid of the Luka step back three. That's had way more run than it deserves. I just haven't found a good place to eliminate it. Caitlin Clark is going to be out again, and we're down to our final four. Chiefs back-to-back, the Freeman walk-off slam, Otani, Simone Biles. I am going to say, they're all fighting it out. Otani is going to eliminate Simone Biles. The crowd is going to get really, upset by that, of course. And then Freeman is going to eliminate Otani.
Okay.
So now we're down to the Chiefs and Freeman. And the Chiefs sneak up on Freeman in classic heel fashion and throw him over the top rope. But Freeman, both feet don't hit the floor. He does that thing.
Yeah.
Where he kind of like hangs on, comes back. They go at it for a minute. I do think that it's crazy for number four to win the thing, and I got down to two and four, but this was front-loaded with some great moments. I think that Freddie Freeman walk-off slam is the iconic moment that stands out forever, and that they eliminate the Chiefs. They win the thing. The crowd goes crazy. It's a good guy, and then all of a sudden, somehow after the match, immediate heel turn. They turn around and they sign Patrick Mahomes, the Dodgers, or something like that. And the crowd's like, that can't be legal. And we end with everybody being upset.
Yeah, I will say this. When going back and watching some of these on YouTube, the Freeman one, that reaction was probably the most, like, you could feel it reaction through the screen.
Did I tell you I almost went?
Yes, you did. Yeah. You knew that. I knew that you almost went to that game, and I sort of thought, I didn't know how deep your Caitlin Clark knowledge was. I kind of thought what was going to happen is you were going to sneak the Chiefs, the back-to-back Chiefs in there, because Caitlin Clark is a Chiefs fan, and I thought we were going to have this thing where this good guy came in and everybody thought she was going to be back, and it was going to be Clark, Freeman, and the Chiefs, and Caitlin Clark was going to turn on Freddie Freeman.
I had no idea she was a Chiefs fan.
It's just, that's
where
just...
Where is she from?
What's that?
Where is she from?
She's from Iowa, but apparently the Chiefs are the closest team to where she's from in Iowa. Anyway, I do think you came away with the right winner. The only other one that I think even deserved to sort of be in that, not even deserved to be in that suggestion. I thought there were two elite moments. There was that one and the golden dagger was so cool.
It was like unbelievable.
The whole stretch of Steph being Steph, because we've talked about it in the podcast before, just how, like, there's nothing in sports like him going on a heater, and he went on a heater to win the fucking gold medal. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So let's wrap this up real quick. I know we've been going for a really, really long time, like really, really long time.
That's fine, dude. Rogan goes for 7 hours. It's fucking fine. It's fine.
He goes for 7 hours and nobody says anything. Nobody says anything true. So we'll move on to the If I May segment. Are you ready to start this one off?
I will be in 3 seconds. I'm watching the Anthony Edwards dunk on John Collins.
Okay. Oh! Yeah. See? See? See?
I don't know how I missed that.
Ant dislocated his finger on that. He, like, missed games.
I see that. God damn. Okay.
Okay, see? So, just giving that.
I was unfamiliar with your game.
Yeah, too quick to get eliminated there, but I'm glad that we brought awareness to it at the very least. So, Pat, why don't you kick us off with your if I may?
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I wrote down for this. I saw today that Adam Silver is talking about going to 10-minute quarters for NBA games. I think it just speaks to how kind of, you know, badly the NBA is broken right now. I give credit to any commissioner who's like trying to figure out solutions. As you know, I've been like a Rob Manfred guy, and I think like he gets shit on for absolutely no reason 99% of the time. It's not saying he's batting 1,000, but like a lot of his shit is like really, really good. And just because he suggested, people are like, they're conditioned to hate whoever the commissioner is. That being said, with that acknowledgement, I hate this. I hate anything that fundamentally alters the, length of the game. And I'm not talking about baseball, the time. It's still 9 innings. If you go down to 10-minute quarters, it throws off everything historically with the game, the records, everything like that. I don't like it. I don't think it helps anything. I don't think the major issue facing basketball right now is that the games are too long. They're 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's very manageable. And I know he said in the press conference, like, oh, yeah, 2 hours is more in line with what people are. I think if you could do two, you could do 2:15. Baseball was at 3.5. That was a different situation. The issue is not the length of the games. It's what's happening during the games. You got to figure out maybe the three-point situation or something like that. But people are not being like, oh, this is too long. They're being like, it sucks.
I would say this too. If you want the NBA, if you're like, oh, how can the NBA get ratings? If you are a person that thinks they may rig the NBA draft lottery from time to time, this would be a year that they might rig the NBA draft lottery. If you were a person that thought that, putting Cooper Flagg in a place with a lot of eyes would make sense for the league.
I compare us to Rogan one time, and you immediately dive into conspiracy theory. Well, go ahead, speak on it. Where do you think conspiratorially he will end up?
I'm backed into a corner now, because if you were gonna do it, you would do it in Chicago, based on the teams that are bad, wouldn't you? Maybe the Nets.
All right, Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
No, it would be Chicago. We know it would be Chicago. We wish we could put him on one of the LA teams. We just can't do it. But yeah, you get the Great White Hope. People want, like, there needs to be the next star. There needs to be the next star of the league. And it should be Wemby, but he's in San Antonio. And it's hard to be the face of the league in San Antonio, even though he very clearly should be the face of the league. There it is. Sorry. Bulls are getting Cooper Flagg. Nothing you can do about it, folks. All right, I'm going to change mine up a little bit, because I actually can't believe I didn't include this anywhere, because I'm sure you could have went on this for a while. But if I may, the Hall of Fame, I thought we were over this, but the Hall of Fame voters did the thing again, and Ichiro Suzuki was not a unanimous Hall of Famer. One person did not vote for Ichiro. And this is annoying for me. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I feel like we're going to be doing this sort of thing every single year that this comes up, that we are doing this podcast, which will be forever, baby. But I feel like this comes up once a year and we're here. But also, if I may, I'm going to pass this along to Pat Barker, who is a Ichiro super fan.
All right. We're going another hour on this. It's a disgrace. The most confusing thing to me, I had settled into accepting that they will not do a unanimous Hall of Famer. I thought that the reasoning behind it was stupid. It was just a bunch of old sports writers being like, well, if Babe Ruth wasn't, how could anyone else? Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. It's dumb, but fine. No, Ken Griffey Jr., he wasn't a Hall of Famer. No, you're right, one guy. Absolutely. Greg Maddux, what? In the Hall of Fame? You're right, one guy who said no. I had accepted that. And then the other rule, they had two rules. Number one, nobody can be unanimous. Number two, we don't respect closers. We have no respect for closers. And then Mariano Rivera comes around and they give him 100%. They make him the first unanimous. It would be like if the NFL had never elected a guy unanimously and they're like, no, not Tom Brady. And then they put a punter in at 100%. It makes no sense. They sold out all of their morals on both issues and then went right back to doing the other thing. Once you put Rivera in at 100%, you got to start putting other guys in at 100%. The seal has been broken. There's no reason to go back to this stupid fucking thing. What are we doing? Yeah, if Ichiro is not a unanimous Hall of Famer, then what are we even doing here? Somebody filled out a ballot and did not check off the box next to Ichiro Suzuki, and that person should be in prison.
I agree. Send that person to Guantanamo Bay. Open them back up for people like that.
Oh, dude, an island full of, like, terrible Hall of Fame voters? I'm here for that. Yeah.
Yeah, we should run the country. That's it for us this week, folks. Just want to let you know you can follow me on Blue Sky. I am at highmotorguy.bsky.social. They got to clean that up.
Man. Sure do, dude. That's brutal.
It's just like a real bummer. You can follow Pat on Instagram at Pat Barker Comedy.
Nope, haven't used that one in several years, Jeff. It's at the Pat Barker.
Well, deactivate that thing. It popped up for me at the Pat Barker.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You can also follow. We got an Instagram account for this thing now. So at Statement Game, you can follow. You can follow the pod there. We will post clips. We'll post links to the pod, things like that. You can find us on, again, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. We're all up, baby. We can do it everywhere. I may get us a TikTok account. I'm not sure. I don't know what the rules are right now, but maybe I'll get us a TikTok account. But right now, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, rate, review, subscribe. Obviously, people are going to tell you to do that. Please, please do so. One of these times, we're going to do a live stream of this when I really feel comfortable. And we might as well do it as a live stream because the fact of the matter is I do not edit anything we say.
Yeah.
I gave that up a really, really long time ago. So, hope you guys enjoyed the pod. This is the second one. Super, super, super happy to be back. So look, for Pat Barker, I'm Jeff Suing. Pat, you want to say goodbye to the folks? We got to figure out the close too, man. What's the close?
I don't know. Nobody's listening anymore anyway. Who gives a fuck? Thanks, guys.
Bye, everybody.